Good morning, everyone. Okay, so the presentation that I'm going to be making today has to do with the work that I did when I was working at My Brother's Keeper, which is a community-based organization in Jackson, Mississippi. And they do a lot of work with the MSM population, Black MSM population, other disadvantaged groups in terms of HIV, preventative services, as well as primary care and intervention programs. So I'm going to talk about some of the psychosocial vulnerabilities that are associated with HIV infection among Black MSM, in specifically in Jackson, Mississippi. Okay, so what we know so far is that men with sex with men in the U.S. are disproportionately affected by HIV infection, and Black MSM are the most affected out of all the racial ethnic groups. We also know that the burden of HIV cannot be explained by just ethnicity and gender alone. Rather, geographic concentrations that they highlight that in the southern U.S., they're amongst the most affected. So we have to look at geography as well. So, like, for instance, Oster et al., they did some work in Jackson, Mississippi, and found that between 2004, 2005, and 2006, 2007, there was an increase in new HIV infections of 38% among young Black MSM in Jackson, in the Jackson metropolitan area. So psychosocial vulnerabilities of HIV infection has been relatively unexplored among the Black MSM population in the Deep South. And these are the ones that have been talked about in the literature independently that have been found to be associated with HIV sexual risk behaviors among MSM and Black MSM. So childhood sexual abuse, homelessness, incarceration, substance use, and depression. And this study aims to see if these psychosocial vulnerabilities are associated with HIV infection among Black MSM in Jackson, Mississippi. And our hypothesis was that Black MSM in Jackson, Mississippi, who experience psychosocial vulnerabilities individually as well as collectively, will be more likely to be HIV infected. So the participants came from the MARI study, which was the Minority HIV/AIDS Research Initiative. And this was funded by CDC. It was a five-year project that started in July in 2013, and it goes all the way to 2018. So, and the MARI study, the PI is Dr. DeMarc Hickson, who's in the back of this room. He wanted to look at social and ecological factors that influence HIV and STI infection among Black MSM in Jackson, Mississippi, as well as in Atlanta, Georgia. So this part of the presentation involves the Jackson, Mississippi site. Data collection was from July 2013 through November, all the way through the end of November 2015. And the eligibility criteria was that they had to be self-report as African American or Black, assigned male sex at birth, at least 18 years old, having a history of having oral or anal sex with other men in the past 6 months, and they have to have resided in the Jackson, Mississippi metropolitan area. Okay, so I think I want to go back and I'll talk about like how we measure psychosocial vulnerabilities. So the study was conducted at Open Arms Healthcare Center, which is an LGBT-focused health services clinic in Jackson, Mississippi, and it's part of My Brother's Keeper. So in the study, in the beginning, what they did was they had them get tested for HIV and STIs, and then they also went through some anthropometric measures of anthropometric factors like BMI and muscularity and all these other factors. And then they went on to another room and took a survey questionnaire using ACASI method, that's audio computer assisted self-interview, which has been shown to be more reliable in terms of the responses than just paper and pencil survey method. The study variables were participant socio-demographic variables. I'll talk about that later. The psychosocial vulnerabilities. So for childhood sexual abuse, it was defined as those who had had sexual experiences with another man or woman before age 18, but more specifically, using Mimiaga et al.'s paper, they defined it as those MSM before age 13, when they had that experience, they had to have had sex with another person who was at least 5 years older than their age. And then between ages 13 to 17, when they had that experience or experiences, they had to be, the other person had to be at least 10 years older. Okay, so that's how we defined childhood sexual abuse. And then for incarceration, it was lifetime experience of being incarcerated in jail or detention. And then for, let me go back. For substance use, they had to have had used alcohol or drugs during or before or during sex and in the past 12 months. And for depression, we used the CESD scale by Radloff in 1977. It's a gold standard, the Center for Epidemiology Depression Scale. It's a 20-item scale that, like, questions were, I felt sad, and some other questions that measured depression. And then homelessness. So homelessness was defined as lifetime. Have being homeless either in the car or not having a home. All right. And then, like I said, they got tested for HIV. So those are the three study variables of interest. All right, I talked about, okay, so the childhood sexual abuse, those are the references, Mimiaga et al. And Feliti et al. So we used SBSS to enter the data, and then we analyzed it using SAS. I'm going to talk about some of the descriptive statistics with the socio-demographic variables, as well as the counts and frequencies, the frequencies and percentages for the psychosocial vulnerability factors. We did separate logistic regression analyses, adjusting for the socio-demographic factors, age, education, income, employment, and relationship status. So we adjusted for these demographic factors because in the literature they've been shown to be associated with HIV infection and sexual risk behaviors. All right, so the participants, there were 178 black MSM. 50 were HIV positive and 128 were HIV negative, and they all reside in the Jackson metropolitan area. The majority of the participants were young adults between ages of 18 to 29. They had the majority were had a low education, low household income. Most of them were single, and a lot of them were unemployed. All right, so here are the descriptive statistics on the psychosocial vulnerability factors by HIV status. So for the some vulnerabilities, remember I was talking about, like, I wanted to see if collectively there was an association with between the psychosocial vulnerability factors and HIV infection. So for the some vulnerabilities, that was the measure for the collective psychosocial factors. And it was a range of 0 to 5 because the 5 psychosocial factors, it was yes or no, did you experience it or not? And then so like no was coded as 0 and yes was coded as 1. So the range was 0 to 5. You can see that the mean score of for the some vulnerabilities, the HIV positive Black MSM had a higher mean score. So collectively, they had on average they had more psychosocial vulnerability. And then for childhood sexual abuse, homelessness, incarceration, and substance use, there was a higher percentage of those among the HIV-positive Black MSM. And then for the depressive symptoms, that was measured as a clinical cutoff of 16 or over, score of 16 or over. If you know about the CESD scale, it ranges from 0 to 3. So like the highest score you can get is 60, and the clinical cutoff score is 16 or above for clinical depressive symptoms. So interestingly, the HIV positive and negative participants didn't have much of a difference in terms of the percentage with depressive symptoms. So when doing the logistic regression separately, we found that collectively, with the sum vulnerabilities variable, psychosocial vulnerabilities predicted HIV infection with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.39 and p of 0.03, meaning that there was an increase in odds of HIV infection by 39%. And then individually, we found that incarceration and substance use were significantly associated with greater odds of HIV infection. So in terms of incarceration, there was those who were incarcerated were 2.6 times more likely to be HIV infected than those who were not incarcerated. And then for those who used substances, alcohol, or drugs before or during sex were 2.44 times more likely than those who didn't use substances to be infected with HIV. So here the table of the numbers. Okay. It's interesting that we didn't find an association with depressive symptoms because we find that in the literature that depression is associated with, it's associated with HIV sexual risk behaviors. So there hasn't really been any, I don't think there's any literature that looks at actual HIV infection, which is different. We also know that, I think it's interesting to note, and this is in the Mimiaga et al.'s paper, they looked at depressive symptoms and HIV sexual risk behaviors among MSM, and they found that there was a inverted U-shaped distribution, meaning that those who were like little to no depression and those who were severely depressed, that there wasn't they didn't really have engaged in HIV sexual risk behaviors like unprotected sex. The ones who were had moderate depression were the ones who were engaging in unprotected sex the most. And if you think about it, it makes sense because those who are severely depressed, they're not interested in sex. They're like in bed most of the time, probably. And those who are happy, they're less likely, or not depressed, they're less likely to engage in unprotected sex. So the moderate level ones are the ones who are really engaging in unprotected sex the most. Okay, so how much time do I have? Oh, okay. So what we find, like the most important conclusion, is that the syndemic effects of these 5 psychosocial factors may be the ones that magnify the effects of the HIV epidemic in this population. But also noting that substance use and incarceration are something to focus on in terms of HIV infection among this population. So I wanted to end with some of the HIV prevention strategies that, based on the findings of this study, that we could take to further our the process of reducing HIV infection rates in this population. So taking a syndemic approach to HIV prevention and health promotion. So we know that depression, substance use, homelessness, incarceration, they're all, and childhood sexual abuse, they're all associated with each other. And there's literature that shows that depression depression, substance use, and homelessness, there's a compounding effect on high sexual risk behaviors. So if you have comorbid sort of mental illness with substance use disorder or substance abuse, then there's a compounding effect on HIV sexual risk behaviors and also HIV infection. And then also, based on the American Psychological Association, there was a report that talked about using cognitive and behavioral strategies. So educating about HIV infection and transmission, using motivational strategy, peer-guided, and skill-building techniques are helpful in delaying the process, the age at which they first have sexual intercourse. So we know that those who are, have experienced childhood sexual abuse are more likely to engage in sexual intercourse at a younger age than those who have not been experienced childhood sexual abuse. Also, using these approaches can help with substance use and abuse problems, which would reduce HIV sexual risk behaviors and possibly HIV infection. And then also, of course, biomedical prevention. So as you know, there's been a shift from the behavioral model of HIV prevention, which is getting tested for HIV, knowing your status and condom use, to more of a biomedical prevention model using medication as prevention, so PrEP or Truvada. But we also know that adherence is a problem with, particularly with the MSM population. And there's some studies at Fenway that have showed that. So that's something that we need to work on as well. And I think that for all these strategies, taking a syndemic approach is appropriate and makes sense. So like with PrEP use, it would be good to also not just screen them for who's at, you know, if they're good candidates for PrEP, meaning that, you know, they've had a history of having unprotected anal intercourse, but also screening them for these psychosocial vulnerability factors, childhood sexual abuse, and the others I've talked about, because taking a syndemic approach on that. So here are the references. I could, you know, if you guys are interested, I could send it to you. You just let me know. And then the acknowledgement. So again, Dr. DeMarc Hickson, who's the PI of the MARI study, and then some others at My Brother's Keeper, Nick Kendrick, Sturdivant, and other staff at Open Arms Healthcare Center who conducted the study sessions. And then June Gibson, who's the CEO of My Brother's Keeper. That's it. Thank you.